Well, we're continuing on in our studies under the title Great Expectations, and we have been thinking about how God has always expected great things from his people and how disappointed he has been as he has come in the picture in the Old Testament of the vineyard owner to his vineyard and discovered that there was no fruit. The great disappointment there was a reflection of the lives of the children of Israel. And what they thought would please God wasn't what would please him at all, and that was their religiousness and their outward self-righteousness. That didn't impress God at all. He was looking for real fruit, a change of heart, a change of attitude, and he didn't find it and was so disappointed. He had great expectations. Then, of course, Jesus, when he came and taught amongst men during his earthly ministry, he said something similar. I am the vine, you're the branches. And fruit is expected if we are abiding in him. And we need to ask ourselves, what kind of fruit? What is he expecting? What should he see as he looks into our lives? And that's how our study has commenced and how it has progressed. Because Paul had great expectations of the church at Galatia. And it's there that he spells out for us the ninefold fruit of the Holy Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit found in Galatians chapter 5. And we read there from verse 22 again. Galatians 5 and 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law, and they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. And that little phrase, against such there is no law, those things, the virtues, the attitudes that are described there, they're such that we never need to find a word of caution that, oh well, don't be too loving, don't be too joyful, don't be too peaceable. We never have to find that restriction because you can't be. It would be good if we tried to make an effort to be more than we should in that regard. But we can't be too loving, too joyful, too peaceable, too long-tempered, too kind and gentle, too godlike in goodness, too faithful and trustworthy. And that brings us to our thoughts today. And it's the little word meekness, and it's the idea of being meek and humble and considerate when it's in our power to do otherwise. So that's what we're going to be thinking of today as we attempt to walk in the Spirit. So it's from a Greek word, as you can imagine, our English word meekness, from the Greek word praotis. And because we don't really use the word meekness, when's the last time in a sentence you used the word meekness about something that happens every day? So-and-so, oh, he's a very meek person. We don't really use that word today. And because we don't use it in everyday speech, it's often translated in a variety of ways as people attempt to update it. And then that can lead to it being misunderstood. People think, for example, that meekness is weakness. I'm sure you've heard that phrase before because it's easy to remember. But meekness isn't weakness. Some think that if you're meek, it's you're mealy-mouthed, you're a pushover, you're a yes man, or you're a human doormat. That's not what's meant by meekness at all. I think folk believe that they've maybe been picking up a little children's hymn in their childhood, Gentle Jesus, Meek and Mild, and they just have this notion of a wee child who would be a pushover, easy to convince and so on. That's not so. So let's see what is meant. Let's take a fresh look at this word, especially from the meaning of the original Greek praotes, and see what's being said. What is being meant? And that word appears 9 times in the New Testament, and we'll come to some of those references in due course. But it also comes from a Greek word, or about 4 words actually, very closely linked together. And the root of them all is praos. And that's an adjective. And that's where we would say so-and-so is meek, whereas the word that we have in front of us is meekness. So it is essentially the same thing. And we find the first three uses of that word praos are found in Matthew's Gospel. And very interesting when we look at them together. Now, one you'll know really well, I'm sure, like me, you were taught the Beatitudes. That's the eight beautiful attitudes of the happy or blessed person. That's a long way to put it, but that's precisely what the Beatitudes are. And we read about them in Matthew 5 and 5, where Jesus in one of them says, "Blessed are the meek, praos, for they shall inherit the earth." Then the second time we find it in Matthew's Gospel is Matthew 11 and 29. And 28, of course, is the famous verse, "Come unto me, all ye that labour and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." But then 29 says, "Take my yoke upon you." I want you to remember that yoke. "And learn from me, for I am meek and lowly." "I'm meek and lowly in heart," he says, "and ye shall find rest to your souls." At times, a handler would yoke or tether a younger animal to a more experienced animal, encouraging them to go on together so that the younger one would learn to comply and would do so with the older experienced animal beside it. And therefore, that would reduce fear of having had the tether or the yoke upon it. And Jesus is saying in that little scripture, yes, you're going to be coming under a different kind of yoke. You're getting rid of the burden, but you're going to come under a different yoke. But my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. And the purpose of the yoke is completely different to the burden that he mentioned in the previous verse of Matthew 11. So remember that as well. Then the third time it's mentioned in Matthew's Gospel is Matthew 21 and 5. And there we find the claim that Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday was in fulfillment of a prophecy made in Zechariah 9 and 9. And this is what we read from Matthew 21. "Tell the daughter of Zion, behold, thy king cometh unto thee, meek, and riding upon a donkey, upon a colt, the foal of a donkey." But that same account is also given in Luke's Gospel. And in Luke 19 and 30, he adds something that's very significant. He says this, "Go into the village over against you, in the which at your entering you shall find a colt tied." And here's the little bit I want you to get. "Whereon never man sat." Little detail. "Loose him and bring him hither." And Jesus was able to sit upon that animal that hadn't been broken in and go into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. So in two of those three, of the first instances of the word praos, meek, that we have in our New Testament, the adjective is used alongside a picture of the taming of an animal. But not just any animal, not just a little cat. It's the animal that has strength and power. And that animal being tamed. What was the purpose of the taming? To produce still a powerful animal, still a strong animal, but a teachable animal, a trainable animal, an animal whose strength and power can be put to good use, can be channeled into usefulness. As with a trained workhorse or ox, it's not simply a matter of passive submission to a stronger force, the trainer, for example, because the trainer physically wouldn't be the stronger force. But it involves an act of determination on the part of the animal to yield to the other force. So it's power under control. But the power's not gone. The power is under control. Just in thinking about breaking in an animal, and breaking in a horse in particular, and doing a wee bit of background research just to get into my head the ideas that are being mentioned here, this is what I've discovered. In general, a horse's loyalty greatly depends on the type of training or breaking that it receives. Horses that are broken to follow their trainer out of respect are much more enjoyable to work with than those who follow out of fear. So, in other words, you can crack the whip that will follow out of fear. But respect is where you will get the most from the animal. And here's the two steps. There are several steps, but here are the two first steps, most important steps in breaking in a horse. Gain the horse's trust and train from the ground. I thought that was interesting. You know, folks, here we are talking about the fruit of the Spirit, which exposes us and all of our failure, doesn't it? It shows how we're inclined to fly off the handle. We're inclined to do things that we regret. We're inclined to do things that show anything but Jesus. And yet we have one who has given us his word that we can trust. But more than that, Jesus said, when I ascend, I will send the Comforter, and he will come to you. We didn't go up to the Comforter. The Comforter has come, as the old hymn says. The Comforter has come, and he has come to us, and he indwells us. He's here, training from the ground. He has come down to where we were to help us and to give us that we need in order that we would have the fruit of the Spirit. So in training and breaking in an animal, there's a term called gentling. I like that. Because if the Lord was anything other than a loving and gentle God with his children, with his flock, we would never be out of the naughty step. We would be getting beaten constantly, because we know ourselves, don't we, what we're prone to do and how we live and what we've even done in the last week since we heard these messages. Gentling, gentle breaking. It takes time. And here's one of the little things about gentling which I didn't know. It can be done with just the horse and a rider if it's to a horse that's going to be ridden, or best done when another person can demonstrate riding on another horse. Monkey see, monkey do. You know what that says? Example. An example to follow. You know the best way for a church to be going on in the way that the Lord intends? It's for the likes of me to be a good example. And that's very humbling. And that puts a great responsibility on my shoulders and the elders. But you read about the qualifications of elders and deacons and you'll discover that there is that very weight there. Not only us, but our families. An example. The greatest example, of course, is Jesus. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. And that's precisely why Jesus, before going to the cross, he could have left heaven's glory and come down and died immediately, but he lived. He experienced what we experience. He demonstrated that it's possible to walk this world in white. And he set us the perfect and ultimate example. So that we could never ever look to Jesus and say, but can't do that. He is the ultimate example. So having done all that and then provided us with the Holy Spirit that he leaned upon also when he walked this world. He expects great things from us. So there's gentling and there's also halter training. And to ease a young animal, an unbroken animal, into wearing a halter, apparently time has to be spent every day. And again, the animal should see the halter being put on another beast. Example. So on. And there's patience involved with this, and we have already talked about our long-suffering God and the patience that he has with us. And then in training an animal, especially a horse, to lead that horse, once the colt is comfortable wearing a halter, it's time to start leading. And a two-horse system works great for that as well. Once again, example. You know, in all of that, the animal that has to be broken is being shown in an environment without fear. I like what Paul says in 2 Timothy 1:7. For God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. That horse, that ox, that animal hasn't lost its physical power, but he has gained a channel through which that power can be fed. The horse is no longer unpredictable or dangerous. It's now approachable and trustable. The horse or ox isn't stubbornly resisting its master and his directions, but is listening for them and quickly following them. Let's think about that in terms of us. Are we loose cannons? In some meeting or other, are we the ones that will be fly off the handle? Will us express our opinion in a way that's ungracious? Are we the ones that are unapproachable and untrustable because of power that's not under control? Are we the ones that are stubbornly resisting our master and his directions? Or are we broken in that sense, where we are waiting to hear the instruction and delighting to do his commands? That's meekness. Are we meek? Do you understand the meaning? Do you want an example? We have one in the Old Testament. And this is the verse, and I'll not name him. You can work out who it's speaking of. Numbers 12 and 3. Now the man was meek above all men which were upon the face of the earth. Who knows who that's about? Moses. That's right. The man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. That's some statement, isn't it? And the book of Numbers, of course, is written after all the events of Moses' early life and his wilderness wanderings, the coming out of Egypt. But Moses had to be broken in. Do you remember he had been brought up in a royal palace, Pharaoh's daughter? He had gone to oversee some of the work that was taking place, and at that stage he was still living quite apart from his Hebrew brethren. And then he saw how a taskmaster was whipping one of the Hebrews, and you know what happened then, don't you? He just decided he would fall to that man and murdered him. So you can see that there was a strong personality there. There was a strong person. And God needed a strong person for the wilderness. But he couldn't take that strong person that way. So what happened to Moses? He had to spend 40 years before he went into the wilderness journey. 40 years as a shepherd. And the description in the AV, I like it. The backside of the desert. The back of beyond. Plenty of time to reflect. Plenty of time to be alone. Plenty of time to be broken. Did he come out this useless weakling, this doormat of a man, this mealy-mouthed? Not a bit. He was able to go and stand before Pharaoh. Yes, he felt that he couldn't articulate as well as Aaron, for example. But he even got past that. And he stood not only with his own power brought under control, but in the power of God also. Not leaning on his own power, because that had been brought in, but depending on the power of God. Meekness isn't weakness. It's being pliable but not pitiable. Having a teachable spirit. It's the very opposite of being stubborn and self-willed. Meekness is an expression of humility and consideration. Considering others before our own goals. That's meekness. And who do we mean by others? Well, God first. Considering his goals before our goals. And then the people that we engage with. Do we even realize that the people we engage with have their own place in this world, in our assembly, in our family structures? Do we see that as important? Do we acknowledge that? If we do, then there's meekness. As we said, it's mentioned 9 times. So we have it here in Galatians 5 and 23. It's also found, Paul writing, in 1 Corinthians 4 and 21, where we read, "What will ye? What would you like me to do?" he said. "Shall I come to you with a rod? Or in love and in the spirit of meekness?" So you can see straight away the contrast. Do you want me to come to you with a rod? Or with love and the spirit of meekness? There's your contrast. That helped you to understand what meekness is. Paul is suggesting that he could take the big stick approach. But he knows that he will accomplish more by taking the meek approach. And there's plenty wrong in the Corinthian church to whom he was writing. Plenty that would annoy us. Plenty that would fire us up. And yet there's the great Paul. And he says, what would you rather? In 2 Corinthians 10 and 1, this is what we read. "Now I, Paul, myself beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ." So there's our example. "Who in presence," so he's saying that when I'm with you, I'm base among you. There's humility. "But being absent, I'm bold toward you." He's reminding the Corinthian church that it's easier to be hard-hitting from the relative safety of a pen and paper and at the distance he was often at when he wrote these letters. And it's easier to do that than to stand before them man to man in person. But he says, "I'm appealing to you by the meekness of Jesus Christ because I have to say certain things that must be said." And he says, "If I do this in that spirit, I want you also in that spirit to receive them, to be trainable, to be teachable, to be pliable." Galatians 6 and 1. "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual," that's what we're aiming for, "restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted." Here Paul's visualizing the rightful and dutiful discipline that must, from time to time, be exercised within an assembly. But he's urging the oversight to respond in the spirit of meekness. Regardless of how much injury has been caused by the offender, it's still not a reason to just go in and push all out of your way in a rude and cold and calculated and callous manner. Consider yourself. And you know, when we think about that and think about how we are under Christ as the head of the church. So as overseers in the church, never forget that. And there's many a thing overseers do that isn't right, and we still expect him to be gracious and meek with us. In Ephesians 4 and 2, "with all lowliness and meekness," you see these two put together again, "with long suffering, forbearing one another," bearing with each other in a long suffering way, "forbearing one another in love." So that's for everybody. It's not just for overseers. It's not just for pastors. It's not just for elders. That's for everybody. All together with lowliness and meekness and long suffering, forbearing one another in love. Colossians 3 and 12. "Put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved, a heart or an attitude that's merciful, kind, humble in mind, meek and long-suffering." Attitude of the heart. 1 Timothy 6 and 11. "But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness." Run away from what things? Pride, being puffed up with conceit and at the same time not understanding the deep things of God. That's why we're in these passages, so that we will understand what the reality of walking with God is. Fleeing or running away from having an unhealthy craving for controversy or quarrels about words that produces envy and dissension and slander and evil suspicions. You know, I'm in church life long enough to know that there are individuals, they're in every fellowship, and they just love to twist, to be contrary. They're sitting thinking of ways to trip you up after you've said something, to have an answer, a smart answer, a witty, a sharp answer back. They're everywhere, but it's not meekness. Not meekness. That needs to be broken. And sadly, I've known folks saved 40, 50 years, and that's their attitude. Let it not be here. Run away from these things, Paul says to Timothy. When you know, this is where the power is under control. When you know that you could win the argument. When you know that you have an answer that's better than their answer. When you know all of those things, but if you were to give it, it would only inflame the situation. You know, there's times to step away. And that's where the power under control, that's when meekness really comes to the fore. Like all of the others, it's whenever we're put to the test. We need to know sometimes what to say that will quench the situation, not inflame it. 2 Timothy 2:25. In meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. And really what Paul's saying to Timothy there is to be humble when he's correcting those who oppose him fundamentally, or oppose the teaching. We're, of course, building this upon the fact that Paul has given sound teaching to Timothy and Timothy's giving sound teaching to them. But sometimes it's opposed. And even at that, Paul says to Timothy, be humble when you're correcting such people. And Titus 3:2, speak evil of no man, to be not brawlers, there again, those who engage in a fight, but gentle, showing meekness unto all men. Don't use force. Use meekness. You know, there have been many times in my history in church circles, which goes over quite a period, as you know, in different fellowships. There are times when I could have said, I could have done. And in seeking the Lord and in leaving these things before the Lord, I've known that it wasn't the path to take. I can tell you just of one illustration of a couple who, well, whenever I come into the ministry, I remember Pastor David Scott saying, you know, Philip, Christians will tell you lies. And I remember Pastor Harold Chambers saying, you know, when you go into the ministry, you'll discover your ears get bigger and your eyes get bigger. Things will just come to you that you didn't expect to hear and to see. So having had those two words of advice in my head, they came together. And there was a couple who repeatedly deceived me. And it was silly things. It was things that they shouldn't even have tried. Things like why they wouldn't be at the meeting. But here's the thing that I was told, but as Harold Chambers said, you'll start to hear and see. I'm amazed at how many times people unrelated in that circumstance were able to tell me about the evidence of where they actually were. And what happened was, I started to make a note. You want to see my diaries from the past. Started to make a note, because I got a wee witness of the Spirit sometimes when I was being told something. And I had no evidence to the contrary, just had a wee witness of the Spirit. It must have been maybe just the way in which it was said. And I wrote it down. And I remember being in a cafe one day with a couple who are from a completely different church, and it was through links with others and others and others on Facebook, and there they were able to show me photographs of a certain party that took place whenever I was told a different reason for non-attendance at an important meeting, and on I could go. Do you know what happened, folks? I had all this stuff written down. And I was always thinking, when would I use that? And then one day, I remember, it must have been a wee card or something, that said, "Love keeps no record of ills." Now, that's hard to do when you have been lied to consistently. And I remember I stopped recording after that. That was power under control. I had the power to blow that whole thing up. It was really quite personal to me, I suppose. But it was within an assembly setting. And that was when I discovered the Lord's breaking me. But I'm glad. Jesus, of course, is our great example. We've already mentioned these verses. He comes meek. The king. Meek. That's what frustrated Israel. Israel can get their head around that. To this very day, even in speaking to folks in a recent trip to Israel, asking the Jewish guide and so on, do you never consider Jesus? Or why would Jewish people not take Jesus seriously? And immediately the answer comes. And we sometimes forget their answer. And their answer is, but the prophecies in the Old Testament said that he would set up a glorious kingdom and all this would happen and they would reign in there. There would be a reign of righteousness. And I believe that will happen. And Israel's waiting for that to happen. But they said that didn't happen when Jesus came. And that was the problem, because he came meek and lowly. He came as the lamb to the slaughter. As the sheep before his shearers is dumb. There's the prophecy. They forget about that one. They wanted the mighty conqueror, but they didn't want the one who would conquer death and hell and the grave by his death on the cross. Aren't you glad we have a mighty conqueror who's meek and lowly in heart? That's why they would not understand what Jesus said in Matthew 5 and 5. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Because they could only understand that inheriting the earth would be something like Hitler or Alexander the Great or some of these Caesars. Conquest, might, power, brutality. That's how you conquer the earth. What on earth are you saying? The meek shall inherit the earth. How will that ever happen? Well, friends, let me remind you of something. Jesus tells the truth. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. What does Paul say in 1 Corinthians 6? Do you not know that the saints will judge the world? Isn't that powerful? If we are children, Romans 8, then heirs. Heirs of God, joint heirs with Christ. We'll rule and reign with him. 2 Timothy says that. 2 Timothy 2 and 12. If we suffer, there's your meekness. We shall also reign with him. The meek shall inherit the earth. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness. And next week, if we're spared, we'll be thinking of temperance. And against such, there is no law. May the Lord bless these thoughts to your hearts. For his name's sake. Our hymn is "Take Time to Be Holy," and we'll stand as we sing together.